You are legally blind. You can never drive again. We need to get some tests done. You can either I cut your license up now and report you to TMR because there is a legal obligation, or I said, no, I'll just take it in and hand it in, Lisa, and get an 18 plus. Mm. You know,
why was that important to take it in yourself?
Well, I'm not putting that load on Lisa.
Mm.
You know, I'm an adult.
Yeah.
You know, you have choice as an adult to take responsibilities, and part of, as an adult, you obey the laws. And if you've got not legally allowed to drive, well, you're not legally allowed to have a driver's license.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to break the law. I'll do the right thing. But, you know, there's also that secondary thing of saying to my kids, look, yeah, shit happens. Move on. If you want your kids to be a certain type of person, act in a certain way, be ethical, be honest, live your life with integrity, well, haven't you got to do that yourself?
Even despite the circumstances.
Circumstances don't change the need to be in, have integrity and be ethical and be honest.
I want you to say that one again.
Circumstances, they don't. How can a change in circumstance mean that you don't have integrity? I've been dragged onto trains and shoved, and people grab my cane and try and I say, no. And I got really cranky one day and say, mate, do you want me to grab your eyes? And he goes, why? I said, well, you've got my eyes. Let them go.
That's a great call.
I was
like
so
that.
Cranky because I became disoriented because he grabbed my cane. If someone says it's a barrier, turn it into a challenge. In other words, always look for the positive.
Yeah.
Have a go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just have a go. Find another way to do it.
Yeah.
And if you are not sure, ask someone else to help you find the other way.
Okay.
Because your end goal is the more independent you are, the more healthy you are mentally, physically.
Beautiful.
And emotionally.
Okay. Have a go. Step up. Ask for help. And where practical, don't choose to rely on others. Don't choose to lean on others.
Yep.
Create your own independence.
I'm going to throw one more in.
Please do.
Never be ashamed of your disability. Ever.
Yeah.
Ever.
Yeah.
Because you know what? It's just part of life.
Well, Chipster, you know what time of the week it is.
It's time for a journey.
with the Burnster
and
the Chipster.
There you go. Hey, bit of telepathy there. We got there.
Mate, welcome aboard. How's your week been?
Mate, it's been fabulous. Been busy.
Yeah.
Busy one, but all good stuff.
But give us, well, if it's good stuff, there has to be actionable. That's what we keep on telling the guests that listen to us. What action you been up to, mate?
Mate, but just moving toward my purpose of bringing joy.
Yeah.
So lots of work on this podcast, lots of work on the feature film we're going to be shooting in September as well.
Ah, wonderful, mate. Now, that's not a journey with Bernie and Chipster. That's a chip film.
Yes.
Tell us about it.
It's a little action horror comedy. Lots of goo. Lots of exploding body parts.
Mate, I'm laughing to myself because how the heck does that fit in with our journey over here?
Mate, it's about you will feel when you're watching that film, you'll feel the joy I'm feeling as the filmmaker.
Yeah.
And then we export that to the viewers. It's about bringing joy.
Yeah, I just want to remind you, mate, that you've asked me to be one of the actors on the film. Is that correct?
I asked you to come to set. I'm not sure if we've got a role for you this time, Bern. Don't worry, I'll write something for you.
Well, mate, the only time I've ever been on a film, I was told to stop overacting.
Yeah, that's a true story. That's the truth. That's enough, he said.
Now, dear listeners, are you hearing that laugh in the background over here? Because we've got a beautiful lady. But not just a beautiful lady. I'm looking down here, and for the first time ever, Jim, I've never had a guide dog in the studio.
No. He's a handsome boy.
He
too.
Is That'll a handsome boy. But if I mention his name, Rocket, he'll probably, oh, no, the ears didn't even prick up.
No,
there
chill.
He is. No, no, he is fast asleep because Narelle Gaddy, our beautiful guest, thank you, Narelle, for being with us. We first met at a BX Business Network meeting. And a meeting in which we share our activities with other people and those of business, and we network together to help each other grow our businesses, and we learn from each other. And I certainly learned from you very, very quickly that I had to have you as a podcast guest because, thanks, dear people, I'm not going to share with you exactly Narelle's condition. She's going to tell us what her condition is through her story of the morning. You look as though you've had a bit of a fun time this morning. Where have you been?
Yeah, a group of what we call blindies. So they're people.
I love that. That's so Australian.
A group of blindies.
Yeah, people with vision impairment.
Yeah. Okay.
Once a month we meet.
Yeah.
And we have a cuppa and we have a good time and we talk about different things that are happening. Like I learned actually at the moment, Goma has an audio described tour.
Can you help us out? Who's Goma? What's Goma?
Gallery of Modern Art.
Okay.
And I didn't know. And there's an exhibition there at the moment called, I think it's called The Fairies.
Yeah.
And there's an audio described version. I thought, oh my gosh.
Fairy Tales, I think it's called. Yeah.
Something like that. And friends have been telling me about it, but I thought there's no point in me going. There's an audio described version.
Wow.
I can go. And then I said, oh, but do you know Queensland Theatre Company does audio described shows for every season or play they put on? They put on at least one audio described sign language so people with disability can go and do it.
And
Little Red Company does it with musicals. So we were talking about that and everyone's saying, oh, you got tickets to this? No. But yeah, so we have a cuppa once every month.
Okay.
And we go to we were going to different cafes, but we've made the decision we're going to go to one now.
But you said before that your blindness came a little later. Take us through the journey of how your current state of blindness arrived. And it didn't start when you were 40s. It started a lot earlier.
No, that's right.
Yeah.
I was actually born short-sighted now. I grew up in a cattle property and back then, there was no optometrist nearby. There was none of that. And this was in the age, and Bernie, we've already laughed and talked about this, the blackboards.
Yes.
And the exams used to be written on the blackboards.
Yes.
The good kids sit up the front and the bad ones sat down the back.
Where did you sit? I would have put you down the back. I reckon there's a little bit of naughtiness there.
No. That was Brett and Leslie and Ross.
You still remember?
And Hutchie. Well, they're still friends today.
Oh, that's amazing.
They're still friends today.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, well, Glenn's passed away, but, you know, there were these boys and they were always up the front. Down the back. Well, this particular time, they must have been a bit extra naughty.
Yeah.
And Mrs. Oram swapped the kids.
Yeah.
And I thought my level of sight was quite normal. So we'd beat up the paddock and Dad would say, oh, do you see that old cow over there? Yeah, I want you to go around and just walk around and get a move and roll. And, of course, I didn't know. So I'd go to the cow that I thought, well, I couldn't see what it was. So it caused a lot of barriers that way.
Right.
And Dad thought I was just being stupid.
Right.
And, of course, later on he learned
I
wasn't.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And I, so I basically started
What age
exams.
Were you when did you become aware that you had a sight condition?
About 8, 9.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And, like, I was no good on a horse because I was terrified of the ground because I couldn't see the ground. But I thought it was normal that you couldn't see the ground.
Even at 8 and 9, you had no perception of depth?
No.
Okay.
No, I didn't. And, like, going up a ladder was a bit more terrifying for me because to me, you know, everything looked big.
Yeah.
Because that depth perception wasn't there.
Yeah.
Anyway, Dad, basically I've got a brother that's 15 months older than me and Dad did the old eye chart. I'm a dad's girl, so I'm hanging over Dad's back and watching him do the old eye chart, you know, the big letter E and the next size down. And we had a long haul, so he sent my older brother Stu up the hall and says, oh, read that, Stu. And Stu goes, read it perfectly. And he sent me up and he said, oh, read that, Rel. So I read it. And he goes, oh, rubbish, teachers talking rubbish. And my mum, I love my mum, said, Cole, she was hanging over your shoulder. Right. And I've got a very good memory because that's one of the things I've developed.
Yeah. Mm.
And so I was sent to the other room.
For trying to pass the eye test.
Yeah, and Dad sent Stu up the hall, and Stu passed it perfectly again, sent me up the hall, and of course I failed.
Yeah.
So within an hour, I got to have the day off school.
Yeah.
And
it's not all bad.
No, and I got the meat pie from Mr. Simpson's Ampol Servo in Rocky.
Yeah.
And I loved the meat pies from Mr. Simpson's Servo. And yeah, that's when mum and dad realised.
That's at eight, 9 years
eight,
of
nine,
age there. You're becoming aware. Mum and dad are aware. But from a previous conversation, if I recall correctly, you said things averaged out for a while and for about 20, 23, 24 years. Your site has a degree of value.
It did. I've driven, the only thing I haven't driven is a grader because Dad wouldn't let me.
Mm.
And actually, my cousin Bruce had a semi and he wouldn't let me drive the semi. Don't know what it is. I know.
What's wrong with you, Bruce?
Yeah. Well, Bruce is about 6'6" and built. I don't take Bruce on. At all.
You would have if you could, though.
Yeah.
Oh, no, actually, no. We're talking Bruce. But, yeah, so I've driven a fair bit of Australia. I can change a tyre, can do the basic. I learned. That was what, as kids, we were taught to do. But, no, I started having car accidents.
Oh, okay.
And I thought, and I was falling over chairs and things, and I thought, I need new glasses. And the optometrist at the time she still is a good friend, her and her husband, and I left the kids home with the hubby and I drove to the optometrist and walked in and said, bloody hell, Lisa, you got these glasses. They didn't work properly, Lisa. I keep having this. And she goes, this is after having the glasses for a couple
of
weeks.
Let's get this in context. This is when you're about 40.
42.
Hello there, my sleek spiritual salamanders. It's Chip, just dropping in with the first of today's loaded questions. And it's a bit of a thought experiment today because Narelle's story got me thinking about how much I love watching movies. And I started wondering what it would be like if I lost my sight and now suddenly I couldn't do this thing I loved anymore. I couldn't watch movies anymore. It's a scary thought, but at the same time, it's very possible, isn't it? Life throws those curveballs all the time. Just ask Narelle. And you've got a choice. Let those curveballs knock you down or catch them and get back in the game. So here's the question. If tomorrow you lost one of the things most precious to you, could be your sight, could be your hearing, could be a loved one, could be a pet, could be your job, how could you learn not just to live with that loss, but how could you figure out new ways of living to maximize your life in spite of and in the presence of that loss?
So there you are, Narelle. You've gone to see Lisa, your great friend, but who's also your optometrist. You've recognised that there are issues with your sight. This time for a big check over here, and things that day didn't quite go according to. Why don't you tell us the story?
Yeah, so I'd gone in and said, Lisa, I'm having a couple of car accidents, falling over chairs. I think you stuffed my glasses up. And she goes,
poor old Lisa.
Oh, Lisa's got a really good sense of humour, luckily. She's my friend, so lucky she's got one. Anyway, we started doing this test called Fields.
Yeah.
And I laugh and my kids call it the computer game. So what it is, it's whenever you see a light, you press a button and it tests the boundaries of what you can see. So the light moves.
Yeah.
And Lisa and I are talking about the kids and Tim's done this and Jess and the boys have done this and Pete's done. Oh, yeah, Peter, going through all their normal stuff. And I'm thinking, this game's a bit boring. Not many lights. And I'm, saw a light. Oh, yeah. What about Ross? What's he? Oh, yeah, saw a light there. And he started getting upset. And I'm thinking, a bit strange. Okay. Pressing lights, and we swapped over to the other eye and keep talking and pressing lights and not many lights. And I'm thinking, Lisa goes, look, I'll be back in a minute. Keep pressing lights. And Ron's like, pressing a light. Yeah, okay, there's a light. Oh, there's a light. Oh, there's a light there. And what I know now, she'd actually gone out because I'd actually driven the car to the optometrist. She'd actually gone out and told her husband to go get my husband, because we only had one car, and told him what was going on. So he knew before me. And came back, finished the test, and she said, well, give me a driver's license. You've got two options, Rel. And I said, yeah. And she said, you are legally blind. You can never drive again.
Wow.
We need to get some tests done. You can either I cut your license up now and report you to TMR because there is a legal obligation, or I said, no, I'll just take it in and hand it in, Lisa, and get an 18+. You know,
why was that important to take it in yourself?
Well, I'm not putting that load on Lisa.
Mm.
You know, that's – I'm an adult.
Yeah.
You know, you have choice as an adult to take responsibilities, and part of – as an adult, you obey the laws. And if you've got not legally allowed to drive, well, you're not legally allowed to have a driver's license.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to break the law. I'll do the right thing. But, you know, there's also that secondary thing of saying to my kids, look, yeah, shit happens.
Mm.
Move on.
With that immediacy? I mean,
I had to.
Yeah.
Because don't forget, I've got two sons that have more needs.
Yeah, elaborate on that, please.
I've got my gorgeous gentle giant, Peter, who's 30 now, and he's ADHD.
Okay.
And then there's my Nick. Nick's 29.
Yeah.
And Nick's full on. Nick's Asperger's. So Nick will be on the ground at 1 minute and up in the ceiling.
Mm.
And then I've got Davey lad. And David is 27, and he's the abnormal one in the house because he doesn't have anything wrong with him.
He hasn't got a diagnosis yet. Yeah.
But well, that's true. He has been known to pick fights, and I sort of think there's something there. You know, if you feel the need to pick a fight or punch someone, you know, it's not quite normal.
He just watches too many Rocky movies, maybe.
Oh, don't get me started. Don't get me started with that boy. But no, I've got three fantastic sons.
Yeah.
But having kids with some extra needs, my life is, and it still is, yes, they're all grown up, but the kids are the center of my life, my husband and my kids.
Yeah.
And my husband does have autistic tendencies, is the way I term it. And you've got to, if you want your kids to be a certain type of person, act in a certain way, be ethical, be honest, live your life with integrity, well, haven't you got to do that yourself?
Even despite the circumstances.
Circumstances don't change the need to be in, have integrity and be ethical and be honest.
I want you to say that one again.
Well, circumstances, they don't. How can a change in circumstance mean that you don't have integrity and that you don't follow through?
Yeah.
That lets you off the hook from those things.
It doesn't let you off the hook.
Mm.
Do you ever cut yourself some slack?
I can't afford to.
Elaborate.
If the only time I will cut myself some slack is when I say, look, I know I can't do it this way. I have to find another way.
Yeah.
And at times I have gone and I'll say to my support worker, or I'll say to my guide dog instructors, if there's something I haven't got right, because don't forget, it's never the guide dog's fault.
Yeah.
It's
always
the guide dog handler's fault.
Right.
It's not the guide dog's fault.
Yeah.
If the guide dog's not doing what you want them to do, it's because you are not in control.
Mm. You're not giving them the right signals.
You're
not giving
them the right signals.
Mm.
He's trained for the signals.
Yeah.
And that's not a problem. I mean, I made meat pies a couple of weeks ago, and I've lost sight since I last made them, and I had the meat sauce everywhere, and I end up going to my husband saying, yeah, can you come and fix this? And he looked and he says, yeah, I think there's a bit much meat in those pies. So he fixed that, and now I know, okay, I've got to find another way to put the meat in the meat pies. That's simple. That's not hard. It's not rocket science. It's just changing a practice so that you can still do it.
Yeah. Mm. Can I ask you, are you better? How good are you at asking for help? And furthermore, can you comment, please, on the importance and the value generally. I'm talking about outside of yourself. Asking for help.
Okay. I'm really bad at asking for help.
Okay.
I am really bad. I've got a few people that I don't blink. I will ask my son straight away. I will go to my husband straight away. Not my mum so much anymore. Mum's getting on.
Yeah.
There's one special friend, wouldn't think twice. And I know that Pauline will say, yeah, we'll help. Mm. Now, and there's another friend, very special friend, Sharon, that I can say, yeah, Sharon, I just need a little bit of help.
Yeah.
My support workers, I limit the time that I have the support workers because I need to be independent. It's something within me that says I have to be independent as much as possible.
And the other thing, Narelle, is I get the independence streak.
Mm.
I get why you say I'm not great at asking for help because of that want to be independent.
Mm. Mm.
But you are good, I believe, in my short interaction with you, we're still receiving help. You may not ask for it, but ever since you've arrived here about an hour and a half ago, I've been trying to seek ways that are appropriate to give help, and you've been very good at receiving it.
I have this belief that you never are rude to anyone.
Okay.
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 And if there came, and look, and you often see it, and I think it's to the detriment of people with disability.
Yeah.
And like someone else, and there are times where it's not appropriate. I've been dragged onto trains and shoved, and people grab my cane and try and I'd say, no. And I got really cranky one day and say, mate, do you want me to grab your eyes? And he goes, why? I said, well, you've got my eyes. Let them go.
That's a great call. I
was
like
so
that.
Cranky because I became disoriented because he grabbed my cane.
Yeah.
And he was, and I'm thinking, no, you need to listen to me.
Yeah.
The people that are really respectful, and you've done it respectfully, Bernie,
okay.
You haven't pushed and shoved. And look, we do get pushed and shoved. You'd be amazed. I've been congratulated for being able to walk down the street. And that day I was with my support worker and she's going, take a deep breath. And she's going, count to 200. No, count to 400. And I'm going, 497. Because they don't mean it.
Yeah.
But people think they're being helpful.
Yeah.
And what you, you've got to say, look, I appreciate your thought, but please, I can do this myself.
The message there.
What I need you to do, can you please just tell me, is the door directly in front of me?
Yeah.
If it is, fantastic. Thank you very much.
It's the old story about measuring the outcome versus what was their intent.
Yes.
You know, the outcome may have been upsetting in that he grabbed your cane, but he still had the intent to help, didn't he? You know, and how aware are we of the intent rather than the outcome?
In that case, I did snap because my safety was at risk.
Yeah.
So I will snap when my safety is at risk.
Yeah.
And my husband is very protective of me.
Yeah.
So if we're with my guide dog, and we often have dogs on the loose where we live, and he's liable to yell at them and tell them to put their dogs back on the leash because Rocket's working.
Yeah.
And it's like anyone, if you get disturbed when you work, you know, people don't like it. You've got your train of thought.
Yeah.
You know what you have to do and you're doing it. And someone comes along and says, hey, Bernie, did you see the Broncos? And you think, well, you've just disturbed my train of thought.
Mm.
Now I've got to go back, rethink of what I was doing, where was I, what have I got to do next, what are the steps? Well, that's exactly the same when a guide dog is approached by another dog.
Okay.
Okay.
It's exactly the same.
Yeah. What, the dog comes up and asks Rocket about the Broncos?
No, probably about have you seen that dog smell? Look, if you go down to there on that post there, there was that big black dog gone to the toilet there. Mate, you can't miss it. But seriously, it does. It breaks their train of thought.
Yeah.
And then you have to sit the dog. You've got to get them settled again. And he's a brand new dog for me. I've only had Rocket for 8 months. My previous guide dog I had for 6-7 years.
Yeah.
So Cassa, I would have to get her settled. So come on, Cass, head in gear. Yes, you've been annoyed by that dog. And you need to settle. You need to take a deep breath. Right, now, Cass, take me to the chemist.
Okay. Mm. Okay, yeah. Mm. But you've appropriately at one of the BX meetings, and I was saying, I'm thankful for it, mm. what I'm about to say, because when I first met you, I was all keen about goo, 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 what a mm. beautiful dog, let me hug the dog. And you just politely corrected that don't disturb Rocket.
That's
you
right.
know, let Rocket be Rocket, because mm. Rocket's mm. working at the moment, looking after you.
That's it.
Where you were. But we missed a little bit here. because we've got to go back to that time with Lisa, mm. and because what follows after that day, that diagnosis, and her letting you know, not only did you lose a driver's license, mm. but so many things must have unfolded for you as loss in the months that followed, the year that followed. How did you handle, I think that's the question, how did you handle and cope with the adaptation, the changes that you had to make? Mm. Tell us about adapting.
Don't forget, first and foremost, and I think I've said it before, the kids are my husband and my centre.
Yeah. Mm.
So, you know, we're driving home and I'm going, oh, my gosh, I can't drive again. Oh, shit. Get near home and it's okay, mum hat on again. We've got the homework, got to do dinner, got to get the kids bath, get them into bed, make sure the bags are ready, the clothes are ready. Everything that you have to do to get everyone out the door the next day.
mm.
And then I got up and realised I can't drive the kids.
Yeah.
Oh, shivers. I can't get, you know, the kids were able at that stage, they were catching the bus, but they had sports practice, you know, that two of them. No, they all played AFL at that stage. So there yeah. was probably AFL practice that afternoon and I used to take them to the AFL practice. And I looked at my husband and I said, what are we going to do?
Yeah, yeah.
Because Mark would – we had this routine where I would – we used to catch the train. So I would be dropped off at the train or we go in on the train together. And then because I work closer – to home than he did,
yeah.
I was able to go home earlier to take the kids to the footy practice and all these things. And I'd just started a new job as well at the time.
Yeah.
God, I'd forgotten that. I'd just started a new job.
Yeah.
And so the next day it wasn't just we had to reorganize everything. I actually had to go to my new boss and I was still in the probationary period and say, hey, Rog, got a minute?
Wow.
Yeah, just being told I'm losing my sight. Now, when you're in IT, in a standard IT environment, and you've got your new team member coming up to you and saying, Rog, sorry, mate, can't see real well.
Did he hold on to you?
Oh, I stayed in the team. I was in that team. I stayed there for 11 years.
Wow.
Because he said to me, she'll be all right. Yeah. And he said to me later, you're walking away and I'm going, oh, hell.
yeah.
But we made it work. And I worked in such a good environment with the people.
Yeah.
Now, I'm talking the people, the actual people at that time, because I think he went around and said, we won't say much, Narelle's losing her sight. She's not allowed to drive. And next minute, because I was taking the train in and out of work and there was – this one bloke reckons he wears really loud shirts because of me, but he wore them before then.
Yeah, you were just the excuse.
I was the excuse. I could always see Rob because I still had not too bad a sight.
Okay? Elaborate.
I could
what
see
degree?
Directly
what,
in front of me.
How blind were you?
I was under 30 degrees, but I could see directly in front. A really decent case of tunnel vision is the best way to explain it. Yeah.
So right now I'm a meter away. What can you see?
You're just a blur.
What do you mean just a blur?
Oh, I'm sorry, Bernie. Blur.
Do you see my nose?
No.
Can you see any part of my facial?
No.
But if I go like, if I go to
I
the left.
I can see you moving.
You can see movement.
But I can't see any detail. And it's the same with Chip. I can't see any detail.
You can't see any detail?
No.
Yeah, I'm about 2 foot away.
Who's the more handsome out of Chip and I?
Oh, Rocket's gorgeous. Oh.
Well said. He is a beautiful boy.
He is a beautiful boy.
Chipster, guess what? This is an opportunity for you and I to talk about one of our favourite subjects, Nepal and the Himalayas.
Yeah, I got that pre-trip excitement now. You know, the anticipation's like one of the best bits.
When are we going?
We're going April 3rd.
April the 3rd. And we've got some people going to Everest Base Camp over 14 days, 8 days there, 6 days back, and others at exactly the same time.
The cool kids.
We're going to Gokyo.
Oh, mate, I'm so pumped. Because I thought we were going to Gokyo last trip, and then we had to take these people to where they wanted to go. As much as I love Everest Base Camp, seen it, I am very keen for Gokyo, mate.
I'm just keen for the Himalayas because every time I walk into that environment, those mountains speak to me. They penetrate my soul, but coupled with the beauty of Shering, our Sherpa Yoda and his beautiful team. And, of course, they're founded in incredible, wonderful Buddhism principles.
Mm.
And the trilogy of that, mate, I don't know what it does to you, but I tell you what, mate, I come back a different person every time.
Better person, I hope.
What do you mean you hope?
It's giving you real burn. No, I mean, I love those guys.
Now, preceding the Himalayas, of course, Kagendra.
Yeah, it's the unique experience we offer. I mean, not many tours, if any, do something like this. We're going to take people to give them the opportunity to take a class at Kagendra Second Life School, which is the vocational school that we sponsor in Kathmandu.
Yeah.
One of their main missions is to educate and give opportunities to disabled children. Right?
600 of them now, Chip.
600 of them. Yeah, we should hasten to add, not all of these are disabled children. Because Kagendra is such a renowned school now, you know, people just want to send their children here because of the quality of the education.
And it's renowned because we had the opportunity after the earthquakes of 2015 to embark upon a project to build them a brand new school. And in May 2022, that's what we walked into.
Yeah.
One of the more memorable days of my life to walk into that beautiful school and have that school assembly. Now, we're leaving on April the 3rd. And Chip, for our listeners out there, we're asking you to invest in whatever airfare that you want. And you've got choices, dear people. Yep. You just need to meet us in Kathmandu on April the 3rd. And I can let you know now that there's an opportunity to buy the rest of it, buy the whole experience for under $4,000 at the moment. And there so all they have to do is to get in contact with us. The website's nearly there, not quite.
Nearly,
but
yeah.
We just need them to take this phone number, all right?
Yep.
Now, you got a pen? No, you haven't got a pen. Go get yourselves a pen. Yeah, I'm giving you a bit of time. You got one? Yeah, you got it. Okay, here we go. +61 412 982 444. Replay the podcast if you want to hear that number again. And all you got to do is just text me, dear people, and say, hey, Bernie, I'm interested. Send me an information kit. Within 24 hours, you'll have all the information that you could possibly need to make an informed decision about joining us. Chip, how much would we love to have some of our listeners on board?
Oh, it'd be the best. And it's always a fantastic experience. The community and the walking the trail with other people, I mean, and the camaraderie, you feel like that's... Yeah. That's probably my favorite part of this whole thing.
And as we're walking towards Dingbo Shay from Pangbo Shay, which podcast do you think they'll say was the best, Chip?
Oh, certainly mine.
Mate, that was the wrong answer, you dude, Peach. With great admiration, Narelle, about your leadership and your ability, an enormous strength to be able to lead that normalcy. I'm struggling to believe that over the next year following Lisa's diagnosis, that there wasn't a moment or two or three or five or seven in which Narelle privately is going, oh, my God, how am I coping?
There were tons
of those moments. And I'm talking about the tears. How did you maintain the strength? I don't want a story. Mm. I want to know from you, how did you maintain the strength? How did you overcome those moments?
I cried in the shower where the boys couldn't see me.
Yeah.
Mm.
That was it.
Yeah.
Because I had to find a way. I had taught
these kids.
What
was the way? How did you find the way?
One step at a time.
Okay.
Break everything down into its little bits.
Yeah.
And work out the first step. If you can work out that first step, well, you know, you've done the first step. Now let's work on your second step.
Mm. Yeah.
Okay, now let's get your first. Because Mark and I had taught the kids and we'd been so definite with the kids. And even David, you know, there's more than one way to skin a cat. Look out. So suddenly I could not sit there and say,
Yeah.
Woe is me. I couldn't because I taught the boys that. Well, what a hypocrite.
Yeah.
If I'd turned around and done the same thing. So, yeah, I cried in the shower a few times. I remember one time I did panic because my youngest, David, was sick.
Yeah.
And I was looking at him and I had no way to get him to the – I happened to be home this day and Mark had – well, didn't matter where the car was. I couldn't drive it anyway.
Mm.
And the neighbours on both sides were away and I'm sitting there thinking, how do I get a boy with gastro to the doctor?
Yeah.
How the hell am I going to do this? My friends are at work and I'm stuck. And I thought I couldn't even put him in a taxi because he was just crook.
Mm.
He was really crook.
Yeah.
And I had to sit there and I started panicking because I was, you know, I couldn't even just go and get lemonade.
Mm.
I had no ability just to go and get some lemonade and, you know, he'd flatten it and do all that. I had no, I couldn't. And this kid was getting sicker and I thought, okay, you're going to breathe. We've got to find a way. And then I heard another name. I thought, oh, I think Paul's home. And I just said to Dave, I'm going to lock you in the house. I'll be back. And I thought, I'm going to walk up one side of the street to everyone that I knew.
Mm.
Not that I knew many. Sort of once you got half up the street, I didn't, but I was going to have to go and say, I need help.
Are you walking with a cane?
Yeah, I had a cane by this stage.
And the dog?
No, I didn't have a dog. I just had the cane.
Yeah.
But the bottom end of the street, I never used the cane because I was so familiar with it that I didn't worry about it. And I thought, okay, start over. I reckon Paul may be close to being home if he's not home. And I walked up and he pulled up and he said, you right, Narelle? And I said, no. I told him what's going on. And he said, right, I'm going for towels. Let's put the kid in the back seat. I'm staying with you. And Paul went with me. He said, and he actually rang the doctor and said, right, I'm bringing Davey, well, not Davey lad, but I'm bringing David in.
Mm.
Narelle's with me. David's pretty sick. And he said, yeah, we'll get you. Don't worry about it. And then I learned later what I should have done is just rung the ambulance and told them I'm blind.
Yeah, yeah.
And I couldn't drive. And they would have come. But I didn't know at the time. So I ended up walking the street to find someone that could get me and David to the doctor. And then Paul went to the chemist and like he, by the time we got out of the doctor, he'd been to Woolies and he got the lemonade.
Wow.
And
wow.
Then he said, right, Scripps, right, Dave, sit in the car.
Yeah.
Took the card, off you go. And he came back. And time Mark got home that night, we had David a bit more comfortable, but I panicked because it was my kid.
Yeah.
If it had been me, it'd be, she'd be right.
Well, that's an interesting question because you had so much accountability with David, right? Mm. I mean, you really – it feels like you don't have a choice in that situation.
You don't.
Yeah, but I get the sense that you're this kind of person. Can you break it down for us? Is there a way that you then used that kind of experience where you had to find a way, you were forced to find a way, and then from a learning that you got out of that, you were then able to step up in that way in a situation that wasn't so desperate, you know?
Don't forget, growing up out bush, sit rocket baby, good boy. Growing up out bush, we had to make do. And that's been my life saving.
Yeah.
Because you have to make do. You didn't have milk, you always had milk powder. Okay. If the cow didn't have a calf so you couldn't get milk, you had milk powder. If you didn't have meat, well, Dad would go and shoot a roo and you had roo for dinner. If you didn't have bread, you made damper. You made do.
Damper.
And those lessons have been what's been the saving grace for me.
G'day again, you fine aardvarks of enlightenment. And I couldn't let that pass because that really struck me, that story of Narelle's about the lessons of making do. So here comes another loaded question, and it's meant to be a little tap on the shoulder, this one. Little how you going, because we get a bit too invested in our own comforts, don't we? We've always got the bread, so we don't need to make the damper. So here's the question. I'll make it really specific. If you got banned tomorrow from using your mobile phone, you can't ever use a mobile phone again, how would you make do? How would you stay in touch with people? How would you keep track of your to-dos? How would you entertain yourself without that mobile phone? How would you make do?
But I think you're introducing, right there, Narelle, you're introducing a part of your journey that I know Chip and I are keen to hear a little bit more of. And it's around how the environment around you, how the supposedly called normal ones, how they actually respond. We're hearing a lot about how you responded in your environment and the environment that you created, and we're great admiration for that. But you also have people outside of you. They're the Bernie, they're the chipsters, they're the people that you pass by in the street, they're the people that you work with every day, the so-called normal ones. And you see the way that they interact with you, the way that they communicate and connect with you. And you must be frustrated at times about what they don't know, how they act. Cut to the chase with this. What are the observations you have? And if you could wish that certain things would go away in the way they treat you and respond to you, what are those things that we need to be aware of so that we can react and interact with you more beneficially, more favorably?
Don't make assumptions.
Elaborate. Tell us more.
Everyone has a set of knowledge, okay? As you grow up, that everything that's the knowledge that you've gained through growing up, your environment, your schooling, everything else has given you a set of knowledge.
Yeah.
And some people cannot think outside that box. Mm.
Okay.
Yeah, it's very
okay?
Human thing.
They can't.
Yeah.
And what I'm saying to everyone is, if you look at me and think I can't do something because I don't have good sight,
yeah,
that's an assumption.
Yeah.
Don't make assumptions. It doesn't matter whether a person's hearing impaired. It doesn't matter whether a person's in a wheelchair or has one arm or, like me, has a guide dog or whatever. Or, Bernie, for all I know, you could be dyslexic. Mm. I don't know.
Mm.
You could have a mental health condition. I don't know.
Mm.
Don't make assumptions.
Can I Chip, no, you take a breath there, mate, and you beat me to it. Go for it, Chip.
This is a really important point, I think, not making assumptions. And yet it's such a bed – seems to be such a bedrock human thing to do. I mean, in your experience, is this – you know, is this something that we can do, a practice that we can do that's going to help us short-circuit that compulsion to make assumptions? You know, where would you tell everyone to start with it?
Ask a question.
Ah, I get you. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
You okay? Do you need some help with that?
Yeah.
You know, if you see a blind person appearing lost with a cane, you don't go up and – say, oh, look, I'll lead you to where, you know, I'm going here, I'll take you. Ask the question, oh, hey, how you going? Look, my name, and always say my name. My name's Bernie. Look, I've got friends that are vision impaired, or I noticed, look, do you need some help? If not, look, I'm happy to go on my way.
Yeah.
But look, I'm here to help. I've got a bit of time if you need some help. This is where I'm heading.
Mm. Yeah, well, that's great advice, though.
Yeah. And it doesn't matter whether they're a person in a wheelchair, it doesn't matter. Always say, hey, my name's, because they're a stranger to, you know, you're a stranger to them, they're a stranger to you. Give them the respect of giving them your name.
Yeah.
Number one. Number two, they might appear to be lost to you, but a person with vision impairment, shorelines. And shorelining is we run along the edges of walls. Mm. We know where we're going.
Yeah.
People don't see what I hear.
Mm.
And I've got Google Maps going in my ear, and I've got one other that tells me, you're outside Myers Centre, you're outside whatever it is.
Yeah. Can I play with words here?
Yep.
Right? Because I think you said be careful of assumptions. I think what you're asking people, and please correct me, don't act on assumptions.
Yes.
The assumption is okay, but if you act on the assumption, then you can upset.
Yeah.
How not to act on the assumption is ask the question first.
Yes.
Hi, I'm Bernie. Let me ask the question. Can I help you? You look as though you may need some help. Don't want to interfere if you don't.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I'm checking my assumption before I act and offer the help.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay. Okay.
And isn't that just fantastic advice for interacting with anyone?
Yeah, it is.
It's so basic and it's perfect.
Narelle, are we doing the texting, the emailing, the communication through words? Are we overdoing it when a phone call for a minute can do the trick?
Sometimes, yep.
Yeah.
I remember a few years ago now, I was working with this younger lady and I said to her, you know, she was working for me and we had to get this series of tasks done. And I said, oh, have you, you know, gone and spoken to Joe Blow? You know, it's been a couple of days. And she said, oh, I sent him an email. And I said, yeah, but his desk is just there.
Yeah.
Don't rely on emails. Yeah. Go over and say, hey, Joe, have you got a minute? Is it bad timing?
Yeah.
They could be really involved in something.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. We're all aware, aren't we, that the old – what was it, Stan Freeberg? No, Albert Morabian statistics of 13% of our communication is through the words we choose.
Yeah.
Something like 87 is how we say the words, of which, you know, 38 was the vocal tones and 55 was the body language. Well, as soon as we're only communicating by the words, we're relying on interpretation of the 13%.
Yeah.
And think about it. Someone that's neurodiverse may not be able to read body language.
Yeah. Well,
and one of our sons couldn't. So how did he know that if you yelled? And to him it was, oh, mum and dad are yelling. Whoops. And okay, it was, I'd say, go get the wooden spoon. Yeah. And they were known to actually measure the wooden spoons to try and get the shortest. Bad luck. They're all the same size, but they still checked every time.
Yeah.
But the point is people are different.
Sure.
Everyone is different.
Yeah.
And the difference is good.
That's an embrace difference message. Yeah. But forgive me for saying so, that's as applicable to people from different countries.
Oh, yes.
People of different religions. It's not just people of different skills and and abilities. Yeah?
Yeah. It really highlights the simultaneous difficulty of effective communication, but also the simplicity and the potential ease if you just, like you've been saying, just seek a bit of clarification first.
Yeah, and also, Chip, being in that right state, isn't it? We come back to the podcast of it's about joy and a loving state. Well, if you're actually in the loving state, you're not self-absorbed. You can't be in a loving state and be self-absorbed, there's got to be an awareness of who the other person is. And if you're aware, then I think you're at least you're half open to the possibilities of different communication needs, you know. But getting into that state and living that state more than usual.
Exactly.
And to a higher degree.
Yeah, right? And that starts with, I mean, we talked about it on a lot of other podcasts, but it starts with the self-work.
Yeah,
Being aware of yourself, getting to love yourself, and then figuring out how to offer that to other people. Yeah.
And being aware of your strengths.
Mm.
You know, I saw something the other day that said school teachers, some, focus on the weaknesses of what a child cannot do. And they want to bring the weaknesses up.
Yeah.
And that's fair enough.
Yeah.
But don't ignore your strengths.
Yeah.
Yeah, you've got to focus on the superpower because it is good to fill in the gaps, but bringing up weaknesses is never going to work as well for you as your superpower.
Yeah.
Like Robert Wool.
Yeah.
Natural abilities.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. Yeah. Hey, Narelle, what do you learn from Rocket? Your beautiful guide dog.
What have I learned?
Yeah, well, I want to say, what do you learn? Tell us about the relationship of love between the dog and you. What do you learn from a dog's love?
Oh, he's everything. He's my shadow. I'm his shadow. I'm always looking for where he is. He's always looking for where I am. Even at night, he sleeps beside me. He snores. Thanks, Rocket.
He's a lab. What are you going to do?
Oh, he's a terrible snorer. My previous guide dog, Cass, wasn't a snorer, but like I go have a shower, he's sitting outside the shower. If I go to the toilet, he's with me saying, yeah, you can give me a pat now. But it's also because I've got Rocket, I'm looking after myself more because I get very focused and I'll work and work and work and work. Well, I've got Rocket sitting there saying, yeah, time to play.
Great. Yeah.
And we'll have a play. And it that's fine. It's good. And he does the most rocket doofus things. And he's just gorgeous. And yeah. But at the same time, we go to Mum's place and he's, oh, I'm here. Yeah. And come on, Mum, give me a treat. Give me a treat. Give me a treat. Yeah. Okay, you give me a treat. Now I'm going to lie under your feet and you can rub my belly.
Yeah.
And that's how he sits. He gets under my mum with her feet on his chest and he will sleep there.
Yeah.
And you learn love because it is – and Cass was the same. You know, the day we put Cass down, I'm cuddling her from one side.
Yeah.
And my son that she'd been living with was holding a paw and he's saying, we'll meet again one day. And I'm saying, come on, Cass, it's all good, Cass, you know.
Yeah.
We love you, Cass. And it's just total love.
Sure.
And it was the trust. And I've got absolute trust in Rocket. And until you walk with a dog and you're completely blind or you've got such a severe vision impairment, that trust level, I don't trust people leading me as much as I trust Rocket.
That's what I was looking for.
It is complete trust.
Yeah.
I know when I go to church, Rocket will take me to the seat that we always sit in. And when I say, right, time for communion, yep, let's go.
Yeah.
Cassidy used to headbutt the priest if they didn't bless her.
Yeah.
It was like, yeah, I'm ready. Yep. And we had this very old priest and be a couple of people on either side. Cass was very strong. She was half German Shepherd, half Lab.
Mm.
But Rocket just sits and says, yeah, I'm ready.
Yeah.
Ready when you are, the Father Patrick. Oh, thank you. I've been blessed.
Narelle, one it's sentence. Trust. As taught to me by my relationship with my guide dogs, love is one sentence.
Companionship.
A second.
Togetherness.
A second sentence. Love is. As taught trust. To me by my dog.
Trust.
Give us a third one.
Joy. Absolute joy. It's a joy. I get up in the morning and he goes, I'm here. And I go, yeah, I can see you, buddy.
And the dog displayed love to me by doing what? What did he do for you?
He pissed all over my shoes. Does that count?
it could be a territorial thing. It could be
yeah, he was good. His aim was off that day. He's just there. When I'm feeling sad.
He's being
or
there.
He gets upset. He's just there.
He's there.
Mm.
Yeah.
The constancy.
It's the consistency and the constancy. Yeah. And
you're there for each other, I suppose.
Oh, yeah.
Too, you know. Yeah.
Yeah. I check him every day. I groom him every day. I brush his teeth every day. I know his health. I know his habits inside out.
Yeah.
I mean, we call them service animals, but he's not serving you.
No,
you're
he's
serving
my mate.
Him too. Yeah.
He's my mate.
Yeah, it's a partnership.
Yeah.
Hey, Pocket Rocket, you my mate? No, he's asleep. he doesn't care.
He is chilled.
He's chilled. He's chilled.
Narelle, as we move towards closing the podcast, and you're allowed to throw this question back in my face, because, again, it's probably an assumption here. The question is around, teach us about what has been the benefit. I'm not even comfortable asking it.
Just ask.
And the value of the impairment. Like what has it made you more acutely aware of as a result of from since 9 years of age to 42, that day with Lisa and consequently the 20 years, that near 20 years that have followed? What's been the value of this journey?
I have learned so much. It is immeasurable. The things I learn, the things I get to do that a normal person never has the opportunity to do.
Bring it to life.
The learnings for a start. So I've learned a whole different way of life. I've learned to do everything differently.
Yeah.
I've learned that, you know, and I was guilty of making assumptions. I've learned not to make assumptions. I've learned that the loyalty and the strength of people. And it's there. You don't see it, but it's there. I've learned value of my family.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've got the most wonderful sister. My sister is wonderful.
Yeah.
We're always, we talk to each other two or three times every day.
Yeah.
And there's been distance because obviously when we were younger, we couldn't afford STD phone calls or anything else. So it's only been since the mobile phone that we've been able to.
You've been let loose.
To an extent, it's all of whether she's got, you know, whether there is the network there where she lives.
Yeah.
But it's more than that. It's the, because of this, I, if I was still had full sight, I'd still be doing the same job I was doing, and it was a good job.
Yeah.
I'd still be driving a car and I could travel.
Yeah.
I'd still, Mum would still be living in the town where she is now, and I'd be going up there every couple of months.
Yeah.
And have 2 or 3 days. How are you going, Mum? Making sure everything's all right.
Where does Mum live now?
Mum lives at in Brisbane now. Yeah. She lives in the building next to me.
Wow.
So I would not. I had to move out when I was 15 because back then the girls went to boarding school and work. You were told, that's it.
Yeah.
Okay. So I've really, since I was 15, not had a lot to do with my mum until the last 3 years. Mum's moved down here because we had to get Mum to move because she was getting to the age, you know, she had to stop driving sometime. We wanted to set Mum up so she was independent.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've set, now got a relationship Mum that I would, with Mum that I would never have had.
Mm-hmm.
And it's even down to, serious, I do things, I would not have met either of you guys if I didn't have my disability. Seriously, the people I'm doing, the people I meet now, like even the blindies, they're fantastic people.
The blindies.
The blindies, yes.
Yeah, blind ones. The official name's blind ones, but the blindies.
Yeah.
I would not have known them if I didn't have my sight impairment. You know, my life is brilliant. Would I change it? No.
Yeah, well, that's what I want to.
Why would I change it? I've got a good life. I have fun.
Has your impairment created greater effort to look after each other? I'm particularly referring within family. And as a result of greater effort, there has been a greater loving outcome, a greater loving connection. Do you think in a way it's facilitated?
It's funny
a
because
love.
I think in my head my husband does know just how much effort it takes me to do anything. And it is harder. Like last week going to those meetings, the thought of just putting the harness on Rocket, fighting with the taxi drivers, it was just too hard.
Yeah.
However, at the same time, I probably did need a break anyway because I do have this awful habit of keeping working. It is much harder. Yeah. It is much harder to pay a bill. When I get really frustrated, I have been known to say to people, well, if I can't read the bill, I can't pay the bill. You haven't presented the bill to me in a way that I can read. Yeah, so sad. And they go, what do you mean? And I said, well, I can't read it. I can't pay it. Yeah. I'm not paying it because you told me it's this amount. No way. Mm. No, not going to happen, buddy.
Yeah.
Sorry, Rocket, that's your name. But it is. It's a lot more effort. You get very tired of listening. I get, because I used to love books and I had bookcases and bookcases and I've got past the needing to feel the paper of books.
Yeah.
So I listen to books, but you get sick of sound. My whole life now is sound.
Okay.
Everything I do is around sound.
Do you enjoy silence?
I love silence.
Yeah.
Absolutely love it, but I can't have it. Yeah. So you know what? Move on.
Mm.
Yeah.
Use it. So if I've got to have, like I'm cooking or something, you know, if I don't want to come, you know, I want to speak. I put on the classical radio station and then I use my phone to read the recipe and do what I need to do. If I want to rock, I put on rock. Put on a bit of Spotify and go for it.
Yeah.
And still do what I need to do. However, you've got to be aware you've got competing sounds. I will have my phone telling me what I've got to cook, what the next step is. I've got the music.
Mm-hmm.
And it becomes and much sound.
Mm.
And the easiest way to explain it, go into a noisy restaurant. And too much
sound. Cut to the chase. Mm-hmm. Your favourite rock song. The one that you let it rip in the kitchen. Which one is it? I've got one in the back of my mind. I think I know what it is.
Go on, you pick.
No.
It's got to be you.
Come on, you got to tell us.
It's got to be
you. I'll let you know whether I picked
it. It's an AC/DC.
Good.
Yeah, I wasn't going there.
Oh, really? No, I was.
Highway to Hell.
A Highway to Hell.
Or Back in Black.
Yeah.
Or Hell's Bells.
Okay.
Or,
if I go Rolling Stones, which one are you picking?
Oh, I'm not a big Rolling Stones fan.
Oh, okay,
fan.
Okay.
They're okay.
Sympathy for the Devil.
Yeah, I thought it might be Start Me Up.
No, I was never a big fan of that. Bit of Skyhooks. Love Skyhooks. Yeah. Absolutely love Skyhooks.
Ego is
horror
not a
movie.
Dirty
Steady.
Word.
Yeah. Steady, we'll get down for the copyright infringement now.
Horror movie. You could go to a bit of sweet, like Fox on the Run.
Yeah.
Oh, Kiss.
Kiss.
Love Kiss.
Yeah, I love a bit of Ballroom Blitz too from Sweet.
Ballroom Blitz is good.
Well, listen, Narelle, kiss our listeners, not literally, but kiss them with your last minute on this podcast. And in this last minute, you got to give us the points. To those who are normal by their definition, these 3 points that you must take on board in order to connect with those who you perceive have disabilities or diversities. Those 3 points are A, B, and C, please. Go, Narelle.
A is don't make assumptions.
No assumptions.
Never make assumptions.
Yeah.
B is always ask.
Ask the questions.
And C is don't make assumptions.
Don't act on assumptions.
Don't act on assumptions. Yeah. Yep. Never.
Now, speak to those also who have disabilities. Speak to those who, by other people's standards, may not feel they have normal resources and skills, etc. They too have a role to play in creating normalcy.
Yes.
What do you say to those?
If someone says it's a barrier, turn it into a challenge. In other words, always look for the positive.
Yeah.
Have a go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just have a go. Find another way to do it.
Yeah.
And if you are not sure, ask someone else to help you find the other way.
Okay.
Because your end goal is the more independent you are, the more healthy you are mentally, physically.
Beautiful.
And emotionally.
Okay. Have a go. Step up. Ask for help. And where practical, don't choose to rely on others. Don't choose to lean on others.
Yep.
Create your own independence.
I'm going to throw one more in.
Please do.
Never be ashamed of your disability. Ever.
Yeah.
Ever.
Yeah.
Because you know what? It's just part of life.
Yeah.
Part of the journey.
Chip, you know, for me this afternoon with Narelle, the bigger picture message here is about the wonderful opportunity to embrace difference. And it's funny, I've taken a bit of a broader perspective. All your messages and all your lessons this afternoon aren't just applicable just to the relationship with you and people with disabilities, but with people with all difference. And we are all different. But equally, there are some obvious differences, religious differences. There are cultural differences. There are resource and skill differences. And so the way that we embrace difference is what I believe you have taught me this afternoon. You have given me insights into what it means to embrace difference. And for that, I'm very, very grateful.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. Chip, what about you, mate? Have you got a take home without – can't cut into it too much, mate, but what are you hearing?
What's really just rang out for me is Narelle's a woman who her whole life has – refused to conflate difficulty with impossibility. I think the vast majority of us say, that thing is difficult, therefore I can't.
Yeah.
But she hasn't done that, and that's informed everything she's done. Difficulty is not an excuse.
Yeah.
And impossibility might be, but difficulty isn't. And instead, she's just found a way.
Yeah.
And I just think that's such a take home for me.
Yeah. When we who consider ourselves normal would assume that they need help, that there are the gaps, and we must be a little saviour.
Yeah, they can't do it
over
us.
Here.
Yeah.
And how what poor view and what poor visioning that is from us. Narelle Gaddy, I'm so glad that I met you at the BX meeting. Can't wait to see you again there next week. Hey, I'm delivering the 10 minute next week.
Awesome.
You're going to have to listen.
I'll listen to you this time. Good.
Little plug there.
Absolutely. And thank you so much for being a part of this particular episode. We're so grateful that we get to see through. Will you forgive the pun, please? Through different eyes.
Yep. Thank you for having us.
Yeah,
seriously.
Yeah,
it's been such a pleasure.
It's just been great fun. Thank you.
Narelle Gaddy, you've been part of A Journey with Bernie me. And the Chipstar. And dear listeners, thank you for listening. Look forward to seeing you next Friday at 3 p.m. You know when we drop. And there'll be another episode there to take you on the journey of becoming a more joyful, loving human being. Can't wait to travel with you. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Bern, and thank you, Narelle. And of course, thank you, listeners, for staying with us for another edition of Chip's Take Home Pay, the segment where you get to hear me, Chip Huddy, wrangle the messages and the learnings from this week's episode into hopefully concrete actions, strategies, and mindsets. And today I want to talk about the importance of distinguishing between the impossible and the difficult. Now, you heard me mention it in the body of the podcast, and I think it's so important. And I think Narelle's story illuminates it beautifully, the value, the joy of working through difficult things. Now, she didn't have many creature comforts growing up in the bush, but her family made do. They made damper if they couldn't have bread. She lost her sight, but she's discovered this lovely new way of living, and she's drawn such purpose from helping the able and disabled to understand each other better. And she could have had none of this if she hadn't worked through the difficulties of these situations, if she hadn't been able to identify those things as difficulties and not as impossibilities. Or how did she put it? If someone tells you it's a barrier, turn it into a challenge. Because barriers are impossible, but challenges are just difficult. I think we're all guilty of consigning difficult things to the realm of impossibility because they look so daunting to us. I'll give you an example. Now, this one's from a long time ago. I was at lunch with my then girlfriend's now wife's in-laws and their parents, and her step-granddad and I got into a not quite heated but certainly testy little argument about whether or not smokers should have to pay more tax on cigarettes. So this was at a time when the government was hiking the tax on cigarettes again. I thought it was fair enough that smokers should have to pay more. This guy, being a smoker, thought it was not fair. And he kept saying, "We started smoking before anyone knew it was unhealthy, so why penalize us?" Now, someone moved the conversation on before I could formulate a response. But if I'd had the words, and I do have the words now thanks to Narelle, I'd have told him this. Quitting smoking is difficult, but it is also the right thing to do. And you do the right thing even if it's difficult, because difficulty is not a barrier to action. Only impossibility is a barrier. Difficulty is just a challenge. All of which is to say, there's probably some difficult thing that you've been putting off, isn't there? Maybe it's quitting smoking. Maybe it's getting your finances in order. Maybe it's starting a gym routine. Maybe it's starting a meditation practice. Whatever it is, we haven't been moving on it because it seems too daunting. We've been treating the difficult like the impossible, haven't we? So here's the action step. First, we want to apply a bit of rigor to this. Now, psychologists have this really handy set of steps they call the problem-solving cycle, which we'll link to in the show notes. And it's this wonderfully simple, clear roadmap for solving a problem. And that's all a barrier is, isn't it? It's a problem. Now, I encourage you to read the whole article in the show notes, but just briefly, the problem-solving cycle breaks down like this. One, identify the problem. Two, define the problem fully. 3, form a strategy. 4, organize your information. 5, allocate your resources. 6, monitor your progress. 7, evaluate your results. Isn't that great? It's elegant, it's powerful, it's actionable. Have a look, have a think, and ask yourself, how can I use the problem-solving cycle to break this barrier in my life down into a challenge? Might be difficult to see at first, but here's what I'll bet you. Won't be impossible. All right, that's all from me, friends and neighbors. I'm Chip Huddy. This has been Chip's Take Home Pay, and I do hope you found some pay worth taking home. As always, my friends, auf Wiedersehen, and just remember...